Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the WTF1 podcast. My name is, of course, Matthew Gallagher, and we are talking about the Indy 500, what occurred during the race, and also previewing the 2020 Belgian Grand Prix. And of course, I'm not alone. I'm never alone in this adventure of the podcasting world. I am joined by WTF1 founder and probably the strongest man to ever do a 100% force feedback challenge. It's Tom Bellingham.
Hello. What an intro. I love all these. You're bigging me up so much in all these intros.
And it's all every single time it's off the top of my head. And I have no idea what's going to come out, Tommy. So fortunately, nothing's been too inappropriate.
Yeah, that we leave that for off air.
We actually do. But anyway, we asked some questions from you guys that watched the Indy 500. Maybe you wanted a little bit more insight into what occurred during the race. Of course, Takuma Sato has become a two-time Indy 500 winner now. But as you know, for the race itself as a spectacle, it was probably one of the first times I've actually watched it from start to finish. Usually the Indy 500 for me is, oh, it's on. Oh, quick. Oh, it's lap 40. All right, I'll watch some of it. I'm never really, and you know, maybe people will have a go at me for this, but I'm never really properly excited for it. But this year I was. I don't know if it's because of the pandemic and whatnot. But either way, I was, you know, from start to finish, enjoyed the little, you know, build up and everything. And it, you know, the Indy 500 is always about the build-up, isn't it, towards the last few laps, but then we had quite a disappointing ending.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with, like, people don't enjoy it. Like, people on Twitter or whatever love to kind of argue about it. And if you don't like oval racing, I totally understand it. But it was very interesting that it seemed like a lot more people gave it a go this year. And I put something on Twitter to say, because someone said, like, oh, I've just watched it and I absolutely love it. I'm wrong about oval racing. I think this is really awesome. And so many people replied with the same kind of, you know, feedback, saying I was hugely surprised. I'm not going to pretend that I didn't completely dismiss oval racing when I was a lot younger. Growing up with Formula One, it was one of those things where I just like, well, why do I want to watch cars literally going round in circles? But the more knowledgeable you get on it and the more you kind of understand it. And I think do you reckon it helped the fact that the race wasn't clashing with a Formula One race this weekend, even though they don't clash time-wise, maybe just the fact that there's no other distractions, it was just almost like dedicated to Indy this weekend?
Yeah, I definitely think it helps, because I think before it was clashing with Monaco, wasn't it? And then we had the whole Jenson Button and Alonso, you know, all that sort of stuff occurring. But that was 2017.
Yeah. Alonso's first when we had that one.
But it definitely helps when that's the sole focus and everyone knows, ah, that's the time Indy's on, rather than, ah, we've got a plethora of sporting events occurring today, which usually is the case, isn't it? You have like loads of stuff going on usually on Indy weekend.
You're right. It does seem to clash for some reason.
With quite a few different sporting events. That's why.
Anyway. Although it did clash with the Champions League final this year.
That's very true. But I feel like the sporting, I don't think there's much of a crossover, but maybe there is. True. I mean, football is a huge sport, but that's no research whatsoever. That's me just chatting rubbish. But right, let's get into questions. At Viana. Lots of A's in that name. Why didn't they red flag the session at the end? And if they did, would Sato have still won? That was a question I was wondering as well, Tommy. And the understanding I got was that there wasn't enough laps left to red flag the session.
Yeah, so I looked into it, and the official statement from IndyCar said, IndyCar makes every effort to end races under green, but in this case, following the assessment of the incident, there were too few laps to gather the field behind the pace car, issue a red flag, and then restart. Because it's an odd one, because the green-white checkered, which is called, I believe, is actually a NASCAR rule, which they brought in to stop races ending under yellow. Because let's be honest, like there's a lot of amazing things during the race, but the end is the most exciting part of oval racing, because they're slipstreaming. It all comes down to the kind of huge finale. And it looked like it was going to be the same again. So people were understandably annoyed, but it's not the first time it's gone under yellow. But I do understand people's kind of frustrations, because that's the kind of part of the race you're really excited for. And it builds and builds. And my heart was like properly racing. It's like, oh my God, this is going to be absolutely amazing. you've got two drivers, some almost four actually, because you had Ferrucci and Rahal kind of closing in as well. And yeah, I mean, what an amazing finish it would have been, but unfortunately, didn't quite go that way.
No, it didn't quite go that way. It looked like it was going to end pretty well, but Sato, he was getting stuck, wasn't he, behind maybe three cars that were all battling around 5 or 6 mile an hour slower than what Sato was going. Then yeah, he had to check up and was getting caught by the guys behind. But then Sato managed to make that move on one of the back markers, which then, well, technically not a back marker because there's no blue flags in Indy. But I feel like Sato had almost got that gap. I think it was what, 5 laps to go, was it, before the crash happened?
I think so, 4 or 5, yeah.
Surprisingly looked quite good, but then, you know, anything can change in the Indy 500, and Sato, I think, was very marginal for fuel and all sorts of stuff. So I reckon it still would have definitely come down to the wire. And Dixon, you know, he looked incredible, unstoppable, I think you tweeted, Tommy. And he genuinely looked like he was the only one that was going to win that. Perhaps Rossi, but then obviously that incident in the pit lane completely messed up his race. And then it was actually quite exciting, wasn't it, when Rossi had that penalty, came out, and you could just see how raging he was. And then they did like a little flashback, didn't they, to when he had a penalty before. And he is a driver yeah, that wears his heart on his sleeve, isn't he?
Yeah, last year he had a similar thing where he dropped to the back, he had a slow pit stop, and he was in contention for the win then as well. And he just seems to be absolutely on it. He won it in 2016 as a rookie, and he always seems to be in the mix. And yeah, Rossi just drove like a man possessed. There was an amazing clip where he's going past about 7 or 8 cars in one move.
I think it was 5, but...
yeah, but they're like, some people are like backing off, some people are going around, and he just kind of goes around the outside. And there was a similar clip the year before as well. But I mean, yeah, it was a shame because Rossi, it would have been an amazing fight with them. The thing is for Sato, he did everything he needed to do, and when Dixon did close up behind him and kind of make a move, he covered him off, he pulled the gap that he needed. And I understand that, I mean, I understand why Dixon was annoyed. And I think he even tweeted about, I think it's time the IndyCar throw a green white checker, which is the rule we're talking about before, where they have like a little shootout at the end. But to be fair, it's not it's not the first time this has ever happened. In 2013, Tony Kanaan won the race, and he was in the same situation. And he basically said, you know, I'm absolutely going for it because you don't know what's going to happen. And he made the move, yellow flag came out, and it finished under yellow. So there's always that risk that Dixon can hold behind and say, oh, well, you know, I'll wait to the end, but there might not be an end. I think it was, in fact, the thing that's just come up at the top of my head, do you remember the F1 race in Monaco 2011, I think it was, when you had Button and Alonso behind Vettel on the fresher tyres?
Yeah.
And I think they were waiting for the end,
and then Vettel's tyres to hit
the, yeah, and the red flag came out because of Petrov's crash. And then obviously all the talk was, oh, well, Button would have won or Alonso would have won, but they didn't, because they didn't make the move.
Was that the one where the red flag came out and then everyone could change tyres and then it was basically game on?
Yeah, because Vettel's spent pretty much the whole race on a really worn set of tyres and was just, he had nothing left. Like, they're all over the back of him, but because it's tricky to overtake at Monaco, or near impossible, they couldn't do it. So, yeah, it happens. And I think Sato, it's so hard to know because of fuel and stuff, but I think Sato drove an amazing race, and I don't think you can take it away from him.
No, absolutely not. He was there at the right time, wasn't he? As you say, you know, he made the moves necessary. He did some pretty interesting defending from some drivers' perspectives, and it was kind of ruffling a few feathers, wasn't he, Sato? But yeah, that's what you got to do. You know, that's what Verstappen does in Formula One, and look how well he's done. So let's move on to the next question. Winchy Tweets says, how ridiculous were the ad breaks? I feel sorry for US fans. Yeah, we kind of forget how lucky we are with Sky Sports F1 when we get an entire race with no ad breaks. Obviously, back in the day, ITV used to have ad breaks, and, you know,
don't remind me. Don't remind me.
No, we used to miss some battles for the lead, we used to miss crashes, all sorts of stuff. So now, yeah, we're very much in a very privileged position where we like to moan about the smallest of things, you know, me included, and I'm sure Tommy does as well. We kind of forget how bad it used to be and also how bad it is over in the US. There was an ad break, I'm pretty sure, it seemed like there was two ad breaks in quite quick succession. Then you'd get about 15 laps and then there'd be another two ad breaks.
Yeah, I think they have to fill some kind of quota, don't they? They did they did the same ridiculous in ITV, because going back to the ITV days, they had a similar situation where I was actually at the race when it was Schumi and Alonso, and they had to do, I don't know, say it's like five ad breaks during an F1 race, which seems ridiculous for us now. Like you say, we're spoiled from start to finish. But ITV waited and waited and waited, thinking Schumacher would pass Alonso, and then ran out of time. And then I think they put an ad break on with about two laps to go. So it pretty much cut back to when they were crossing the line and everyone was absolutely fuming. So yeah, we're very lucky now that, well, I think there are other countries that still have the ads during the race, but from a UK point of view, we're extremely lucky that we get to watch that race ad free now, because it was bad. And it really breaks up the kind of coverage and the excitement that even when maybe nothing in particular is happening on track, when it's building to that crescendo, is that the right word? As soon as an ad break, even though we were lucky that it had Alex Jacks in it on the Sky coverage, and they just kept the coverage with the
English
commentators. If you're
listening, Jakes, it's Alex Jakes.
It's Alex
Jakes,
Alex. Sorry. Why? How is it spelt, right?
It's spelt like Jacks, but it's definitely Jakes.
Okay, fair enough. Alex Jakes then. And he was obviously like filling those time slots. Funnily enough, someone on Twitter, Sam O'Gara on Twitter, why they've done this, I don't know, but he's getting a shout out in a podcast now, so fair play, listed all the ad breaks during the race.
And how many were there?
17, I think. So, wow. Yeah, it started at 7:30 and there was an ad break at 7:38, 7:50, 7:59, 8:10, 8:19, 8:32, 8:40, 8:48, 9:01, 9:16, 9:28, 9:44, 9:53, 9:59, 10:16, 10:20, and 10:38. So yeah,
lovely.
A lot of ads.
Right, let's move on from ads now. Let's go to an ad break. No, we don't have any ad breaks. Let's talk about Alonso. He was in that race, surprisingly. What was that, Tommy?
He was in that race. It was a weird one this year because there was so much hype when he was in the race before, but it didn't seem to be that way because I guess people knew that he didn't really have a chance, maybe.
No, didn't have a chance at all, starting towards the back on row 9, I think it was. Noakes Alfie says, only watched for Alonso. It was so different from last time. Why? Well, the main thing is that he couldn't get a setup for the car. The car wasn't particularly good. And that combination at Indy 500 is not going to let you win, is it?
It's not. No, he's not in a... So, yeah, the 2017 he drove for... While he was in a McLaren-branded car, it was Andretti. I think, did they call it Andretti McLaren? I can't remember.
Something
like that. But Andretti are obviously one of the top teams in IndyCar. And that year, Takuma Sato won again as Alonso's teammate. So he was driving for an Andretti. Andretti were on pole this year. One of the best teams at Indy. Have Honda engines as well, which is a key point. This year he was not in an Andretti. He was with the newish McLaren team, who, to be fair, had, Award finished about sixth as a rookie. I think he's a rookie.
He was a rookie.
Yeah, so he did very well, considering. But Alonso just had all sorts of trouble all race, struggled with setup. He crashed in practice, which I think put him on the back foot. And then he also had a clutch problem during the race, which meant that he couldn't pull away from his pit stops properly without kind of getting an old school push start. But even without that, he was nowhere. Let's be honest.
Yeah, sad to see. I think we all wanted to see Alonso fighting near the front like we saw him in 2017 before he conked out. But yeah, as you say, just everything was a perfect storm for being a lap down pretty much and not being anywhere near the front. So
it's a shame as well, because he's not going to be doing the next 2 years. So
no, because of his Renault F1 duties, which he says that he's doesn't feel any pressure going into the next 2 years. It's all just going for glory.
Good luck. Although, I guess Takuma Sato, I can't remember if I mentioned it, 43 years old. So there's hope for Alonso yet, even, you know, I can't remember how old Alonso is off the top of
my head. 36?
7? So you can still win the Indy 500 at 43 years old. So you never know. He might still do it.
You never know, indeed. Another question. At Mando209 Cruz says, do you guys think F1 could possibly have a race at Indianapolis? I mean, I'm sure they want to.
Yeah.
Whether it's possible is another question.
Is it? I don't know if it's a grade one circuit off the top of my head. But I mean, I like COTA anyway. It would be a shame for that to be dropped in place.
And Alonso's 39. Sorry, carry on.
39. Oh, okay. So not as long as I thought. I bet he needs to hurry up then.
he does.
Yeah. So Indy, I don't know. I did like them racing at Indy because it was a cool place. The circuit isn't particularly breathtaking. It's a bit of a Mickey Mouse kind of, when they bodge together a circuit like that, just to kind of have it at Indianapolis. Although the banking was kind of cool, so I wouldn't be against it. But I think something like COTA is better suited for Formula 1.
I personally think COTA's better anyway. Like, if you want banking, just go to Zandvoort. We've got Zandvoort on the calendar now. It'll be fine.
True,
but yeah, Indianapolis. Yeah, I think when you compare it to COTA, yeah, I don't see why to move from COTA. To be honest, I'm sure it wouldn't be a case of taking it off. It would be a case of adding another one onto the calendar, wouldn't it? I'm sure that they'd want more than one US racetrack on the calendar if you're F1.
Yeah, I think they've mentioned it so many times. We had the talk of Miami.
Yeah. That was crazy, wasn't it, that track that they spoke about where they said they were going to be like going over a bridge and stuff?
I loved that track because it had like that enormous straight and then it went back over a bridge again. It looked really different.
I'm looking at that and going, health and safety.
Yeah.
Whereas have a Mark Webber Kovalainen or whatever it was, whoever he crashed into incident.
He's in the sea, yeah.
You're in the sea.
Yeah.
That can't happen. So I can't even believe that was discussed. Unless it was going to become a huge tunnel, which I highly doubt they would have done the entire bridge just
underwater.
For that. Oh, that would be amazing, that would.
Imagine that.
Either way, we digress. Next question. Mike 8498, do you think the excitement of the Indy 500 is a bad look for F1 and its endless Mercedes dominance? Absolutely not. It's an occasion once a year. It's not like you come off the end of the Indy 500 and go, I'm no longer an F1 fan. I will watch IndyCar from now on.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know why so many people think that because one thing's doing really well that everyone will now think something else is bad. Like, Formula One has not been that bad this year. Of course, we have Mercedes winning out in front. But in terms of the races, we've had a couple of pretty decent races already this season. And I think everyone's forgetting that we don't have bangers every week like we had last year, which we kind of got used to, the amount of ridiculous, crazy races. But no, Indy 500 ended on a yellow flag. So it's not like it ended in, you know, fireworks and glory, did it?
No, it's one of those races where, like, Formula One aren't going to lose sleep over the fact that IndyCar had a good Indy 500. Because the only thing that's disappointing when I watch these races is the kind of, oh, you know, wouldn't it be great in Formula One if we had four different guys in four different teams going for race wins and it'd be that close? But rule changes are coming. And like you say, it's not been a bad year. It is disappointing that Mercedes are so dominant, but there are so many other things in Formula One to get excited about, and that's why we love it, and that's why we do this podcast, and why we have this brand to talk about it, because we love Formula One. And yeah, I don't think that Formula One, like you say, are going to lose sleep over the fact that the Indy 500 was exciting.
No, absolutely not. I'm just trying to think of things that were quite exciting during the Indy 500. We had that amazing front right that was on fire, which was
that
quite
was,
the...
That was bizarre. I've never seen a brake disc. You've seen like brake disc fires, but the whole wheel was
just melted.
Yeah, very bizarre. We didn't actually talk about the crash that ended the race.
Huge.
Absolutely massive. And of all the places you don't want to hit, it's entry there of the pit wall. And I do wonder, it's not been mentioned because I thought this might be the case of why there wasn't a red flag and it restarted, because I feel like that would have been a huge repair job.
The tire
barrier there. And also, imagine if they'd, it's awful to think about, but imagine if they'd bodged it just to try and get a restart, and then someone goes in it again. And we know how important the safer barriers are and stuff. So I can see why.
Yeah, definitely, because it was a huge impact, and one that, you know, you saw that camera angle and then you looked at the car and you just went, you just kind of immediately assume the worst, don't you, when you see that sort of thing. Thankfully for him, he'd already hit the right-hand side wall and then sort of decelerated a little bit before he went into that tire, that wall there. But thank God, you know, thank God they have put a huge sort of absorption point there with those tires, because not every racetrack in the world has that for such a freak accident, because you don't expect that. And I think, wasn't there someone else? Was it Alonso nearly crashed into that as well in practice when he crashed?
Yeah, he spun and almost...
He came into the pits almost, didn't he?
Yeah, T-boned against that wall is like kind of the worst place you can have a crash. But there was another good point that was, thank goodness for the aero screen. It's obviously not a pretty thing, but if it had gone into that tire wall and the tires had, you know, hit him in the head, that could be absolutely horrendous. So,
as much as, you know, people think that it takes away from the danger of the sport, I mean, that is literally the point of it, is to take away from the danger of the sport. But they're still going 220 mile an hour in the race. And for me, it doesn't take away from the spectacle. The halo doesn't take away from the spectacle as much as maybe the diehard fans think it does a little bit. I don't think for the amount of safety it provides, it's a 1% takeaway in terms of the actual feel of, oh my God, it's motorsport, it's dangerous, right?
I don't buy that at all, like that side of things. I don't really understand it myself, because, you know, we've had some horrendous incidents last year with Hubert. Like I don't get what particularly is enjoyable about that. Like I get like the enjoyment of looking at the old videos and thinking how amazing they sound and all that kind of stuff, but why you'd want drivers to get hurt, I don't understand that in the slightest. And I think you've got to be pretty disgusting to want that for a sport, to be honest.
Yeah, for sure. Right, let's move on to Formula One now, and the Belgian Grand Prix coming up this weekend. It's race week.
Oh, it is.
Once again.
Raw keek, as Ferrari.
Yeah, which they've noted, which is great. Ferrari have lacked a lot of banter, and now I feel like they've hired whoever they'd originally sacked to now do their social media again.
Indeed.
Right, there's some questions from some of you guys. Penguin Snake F1, how will the ban of quali engine modes affect the teams?
We don't know.
We don't know. Yeah, that's the main point there. But also, people that are hoping that Mercedes are going to be pegged back, it doesn't seem that way, and it seems like it's going to be opposite from what it sounds like, because everyone has a quali engine mode.
Yeah, and also
it's not as if Mercedes are the only one to have it, right?
Yeah, it's also been delayed as well until Monza, which I haven't really seen too much about, but apparently it's been delayed till Monza anyway, so we're not going to be having it at Spa.
They were probably going to release it, and then they saw Mercedes come out and say, it's not going to affect us, and they've gone, Let's delay this a little bit and see if it actually is the case.
It's really odd, isn't it? Because the banning of the kind of quali engine mode for me is clearly a way to peg back Mercedes. But the sport's doing it in the wrong way, in my opinion. That they need to be focusing on making it more unpredictable, and then not just kind of making the rules so it's pretty obvious Mercedes are going to dominate this year and are going to dominate next year because the rules are the same, and then they kind of turn up and go, oh yeah, they're really far ahead, let's kind of do some really flaky rule changes halfway through the year to try and slow them down that aren't really going to do it that much. Do you know what I mean? Like we've had the discussions of reverse grids and all this, and we won't get into that, but that's a better solution than just kind of letting Mercedes walk the championship and then kind of doing these silly things for no reason to try and peg
them back. It's just artificial rule changes that they're kind of panicking into doing because they feel like they have to peg them back. They need to have closer racing. But I think what the fans enjoy the most is that uncertainty, you know, the you know, mixing up practice or having the tyres degrade more, you know, things like that, where we get that unpredictable racing, even if Mercedes win most of them, but they don't win some of them. That's all that we need as F1 fans, is that uncertainty going into a weekend. But yeah, it seems like they're going the wrong way by trying to ban something that doesn't even sound like it's going to affect them and it's going to make Mercedes stronger. That's
going to be interesting.
That's a big L for Formula One, if that is the case, right?
Yeah. I mean, if Mercedes end up like a second quicker in qualifying in Monza, they're going to look like an absolute laughing stock F1. So,
yeah, they are. Another question. Kenzie Pradana. Racing Point seems like they're going to have a great weekend, especially looking at their history on this track. Not really a question, more of a statement. But yeah, Racing Point, or Force India as they were known, have always been rather strong. I mean, we've had that moment where the two Force Indias as they were known. Were they Force Indias or Racing Points when they were challenging Mercedes down the Kemmel Straight?
I think they were... It was the very first race after they were saved, wasn't it?
So they were Racing Points.
Technically Racing Point then.
Yeah, that was a crazy, crazy start to the race. We had Ocon almost going up the inside of both the Mercedes and Perez there as well. It was
you had that amazing picture, didn't you? Where it was Force India still, but they'd been taken over by Racing Point, then they were going to become Racing Point. That was it. Yeah, Lawrence Stroll had purchased them at that point through the Racing Point name, but they were going to be known as Racing Point Force India from that point on, and then they changed it. So
fun fact.
I just thought I'd cover it before. Well, it's audio only, so we're not going to get comments, but just in case we get angry tweets.
We have censored you all. But Racing Point, I would be shocked if they aren't strong around here. But they have changed their philosophy completely, haven't they? They're not the same car as what they were before. They were very much a Red Bull philosophy before. Now they're a Mercedes philosophy. Who knows? They may not be as strong as they've been in previous years.
You're reading my notes again.
Hey, is that what you're about to say?
Yeah. The fact that they've been really good here. It's very weird because Force India, like you say, as they were, every year it seemed like they would just be not really anywhere unless Perez just banged in a podium out of nowhere in a crazy race. But in terms of pace, and then Spa and Monza, they just seemed to be really, really good at. But then obviously this year, the fact that they've gone completely down just copying the Mercedes, it's going to be interesting to see if they will still have that advantage. I think they will. I think this will be their best chance to get a podium this year, I think.
I hope so. Let's hope their running form at Spa continues, because I'd like to see them maybe challenge Red Bull if Mercedes are, you know, in the distance. Let's have a fight for the podium, shall we? That would be lovely. Next question. iNico 10010. Will Ferrari make it into Q2, Tommy? Take it away.
They are going to struggle. I was watching some old clips, actually, and obviously, we've mentioned it so many times about their illegal, or not illegal, whatever you want to call it, power unit from last year, where they were just unbelievably fast, and they didn't walk Spa and Monza because they didn't have the... they didn't have the race pace, but in terms of like the speed on the straights, they were unbelievable, weren't they? At those two tracks. So without that, I think they're really going to struggle, because I was just thinking back to our quali watch along that we did for Spain, and we were talking about how much time Leclerc was losing in the first sector, which is obviously the big straight, and then the long straight. Yeah. Imagine that at Spa, when you've got a long straight, a hairpin, and then another long straight, and then a flat out corner, and then another really, 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 really long straight. They're going to be so far behind in sector one, I feel.
Yeah, it has to be said. I think Haas will be probably the slowest team around Spa. That's my prediction anyway. Mm. But yeah, I think Ferrari will be on the lower end of the points, at least with Charles Leclerc, maybe Vettel. Who knows? Will he find some form going into Belgium? This is all very much, you know, just plucking at straws at the moment. But it'd be nice to see at least Vettel somewhere near Leclerc, because it hasn't been that way pretty much the entire season. But I kind of predicted the other way, and it's still going to, I think in our last podcast, where I predicted that the Vettel-Ferrari relationship will continue to disintegrate.
Yes.
Especially if Vettel doesn't get into... Wait, will Ferrari make it into Q2?
Q3. Yeah, Q3. Yeah, me too. But Q2, that is quite...
Will Ferrari make it to Q2? Yes, Nico. I think they will make it to Q2. Q3, I think they will struggle.
I think we could, like Austria, where we see it's going to be a fight of who knocks who out in the final bit of Q2. They're going to be, for me, they're qualifying around 11th and 12th, 10th, if they're lucky.
And do you even want to be 10th? Because then you're then struggling with whatever tyre you've picked in Q2. So
yeah.
they might even want to start just outside the top 10. So they get a free choice and a fresh set of tyres. Ethan Briggs, 380. Will Spa suit Red Bull better than Mercedes? No.
Wishful thinking.
No, I mean, no. it absolutely won't, as far as my opinion goes. The Red Bull aren't known for being quick on the straight line. You know, they're very good in with downforce. So they'll probably be quite strong, I'd imagine, in the middle sector. But in the first and last, I think Mercedes will be ridiculous.
Yes, traditionally they're weakest, isn't it, Spa and Monza, every year on the calendar, where they tend to struggle. I think if anything, Red Bull are going to come under pressure from Racing Point, and maybe might be a little bit of a stretch, but I could see Renault doing well. They did really well last year, and for some reason, if the Renault's anything like last year, they seem to be really good at the kind of high speed circuits like Spa and Monza. They did really well last year, so you never know. Maybe Renault, not that they've been particularly great this year, but it might be a track that suits their car a lot. And if it is, I can see Red Bull. It's bad news for Albon, isn't it? If Red Bull are getting closer to the Racing Points and Renaults, because again, we've said it before that Albon's 2/10 off Verstappen in qualifying, and it's a 5, 6, 7 positions, it makes him look really bad. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting battle between those, I think.
Yeah, can you believe, you know, cast your minds back a year ago, that we would be discussing Renault being more of a challenge to Red Bull than Ferrari? That's mind-boggling that we're how much it's changed from a year, and celebrating Ferrari's amazing victories at Monza, and we're not even putting them in the equation to get into Q3. It's crazy to think, isn't it? But that's the way, unfortunately, Ferrari have been hindered with that secret agreement with the FIA.
Yeah, very weird one that. We've mentioned it many times, but yes, we'll see how much they struggle without it.
Yes, I think a lot. And finally, last question, has Craig 16, will we get some wet racing? Now, we're not the weather gods, but Spa is very, very good for providing us with some little storms and heavy rain, and just coming out of absolutely nowhere. Four seasons, gives you all 4 seasons in one day. So hopefully we get some wet racing, because that would spice it up quite nicely. And Spa is quite likely for that. Tommy, you just talk for 10 seconds and I'm going to
I've got the weather forecast here. I'm on it.
Go on, then.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Let's do it. Right. Friday, spotty showers, 59% chance of rain. Saturday, a couple of thunderstorms, 60% chance of rain. Sunday, cloudy with showers, 100% chance of rain.
Oh, baby.
This is Formula One, though, and they just seem to be cursed with weather. If it's not going to rain with an 100% chance of rain, it's going to be during the Formula One race. Yeah,
100%. Yeah. 100% chance of rain on Sunday.
Yeah. And yet.
Wow.
And yet
it'll be a sunny, dry race.
Yeah. It's raining at the nearby water park.
Don't. Please don't. We'll see that weather clouds. Radar.
The good thing, though, is that Spa is obviously a massive track, and it can rain in some parts of the track than others, and that's what makes the race really exciting sometimes, is that it can be bone dry in the first sector, and then the middle sector is like completely wet and you don't know which tyres to go on or whether it's going to pass.
Yeah.
So,
and it just may have some absolute gambles from some teams can actually pay off as well.
If we get one of them, I will be loving it.
Right. Well, I think that's a lovely way to end this WTF1 podcast. Rain this weekend. Yes, please. Thank you so much for everybody for listening. This isn't a video podcast. So make sure if you want to get involved in terms of asking us questions, follow WTF1 Official on social media. Use the hashtag WTF1 podcast. And of course, give us 5 stars on whatever you are listening to, or a thumbs up, or however you show your gratitude to this podcast. We are flying up the charts. I don't know where we are at the moment, Tommy. Maybe we've gone down.
Someone sent us a picture actually of I don't know what this category is, but there's a Spotify chart called Leisure, which is just, does that just cover any kind of hobby?
Everything.
And we're 12th.
Oh, Leisure in the UK.
Yeah.
Wow, we're at the 12th leisurely podcast in the UK. And that's all thanks to everybody listening right now.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Tommy. Do you have any burning thoughts before we go?
Please rain.
Okay, perfect. Me too. I will ditto that. That is it. Thank you so much, everybody. And we'll see you next week for another WTF1 podcast. Of course, Internet's Best Reactions will be out once again this Sunday on the YouTube channel. Make sure you stay tuned for that. And that is it. We'll see you very soon. Bye, Tommy. Can't wave at you because it isn't a video podcast. But I'm waving in my brain.
Me too. I'm actually going to wave in person.
Okay, me too. I'm waving.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.